One of our favorite partners, ABC Books on North Glenstone. Fantastic folks, just south of Kearney, sponsoring our Author of the Week, which we do keep archived, of course, at ksgf.com in the on-demand section. It's a resource for you, either live, of course, or if you get to that point, you finish up books, and I've seen you before. You get on Facebook, and you're like, I'm looking for something to read. Or a lot of people are like, I'm looking for something to binge watch. But sometimes it's, I'm looking for something new to read. Well, this is a great place for you to go. You can just browse through the different books and actually listen to the authors and decide, oh, maybe this is a good one to check out at ABC Books. Jack Cashill has written 12 books since 2000, 10 of them featured on C-SPAN's Book TV. He's produced a score of documentaries to regional PBS and national cable channels, one which was an Emmy Award-winning one. In addition to his work as executive editor with Ingram's Magazine, he's written for Fortune, The Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, Weekly Standard, and he is with us this morning on his latest book, which is Unmasking Obama, The Fight to Tell the True Story of a Failed Presidency. I thank you for being with us this morning, and I'm confused because everything I've always understood, the Obama presidency was the best one that's ever existed since the beginning of mankind. Evidently, I'm wrong.
Yeah. You know, you're wrong even if you're a Democrat, because think of what happened. In 8 years under Obama, the Democrats lose 13 governorships, 13 state legislatures, and 850 legislative seats, plus, and here's the real plum on that, Jerry, the presidency in 2016. So despite their overwhelming control of big tech, of the major media, the newspapers, the magazines, Hollywood, Broadway, television, they lost to a bunch of undercover reporters, for the most part, citizen journalists, and people like a guy in a Delaware, you know, computer repair shop.
Right. Which, what we're seeing is this, as best I can tell, there's this recognition that the so-called mainstream media no longer has a stranglehold on the information. Once upon a time, they controlled what we saw. And now that people have been utilizing these platforms with the ability to easily communicate with one another about information, the mainstream media has not been able to control it. And so now we're seeing these tech companies stepping in and pretty much taking the helm here and doing just that and trying to control what information is put out there.
And yet, you know, and that really gets to the heart of my story. The subtitle of my book, Unmasking Obama, is The Fight to Tell the True Story of a Failed Presidency. So, you know, we saw that fight played out yesterday with the New York Post. The tech companies have enabled what I call the American Samizdat, which is the Russian term for underground publishing, that have enabled us. So Twitter and Facebook both yesterday suppressed the New York Post story, and it usually backfires on them. It makes the story even bigger than it already was because they can't do it. They have created the monster that has led to their own undoing. In fact, Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, said after Trump won in 2016, he goes, if I had known that Twitter was going to elect the Donald Trump presidency, I never would have invented it. It's oddly become our best means, even though they control it, and even though they try to suppress a negative information, it's our best means of communicating.
How have we gotten where we are? I'm not naive enough to believe that there was ever a period of time where there was absolutely no bias in the media, because people are humans and they've got their ideas and their perspectives on things. But I think that I do think the definition of bias has been rewritten. Once upon a time, it was considered to be unbiased as you present both sides. But nowadays, well, Trump's lying. So, you know, we are telling the truth by pointing that out, you know, and they can't separate that. What has happened? I mean, is that a journalism thing? Is that a cultural thing? Is that an education thing?
Yeah, it is, Nick. And it's really a media scandal. What we've been watching for the whole Obama presidency was a media scandal, because for 8 years, they suppressed all negative information about Barack Obama. It didn't used to be this way. I remember when I was younger, I used to listen to NPR all day without getting offended. I'd watch CNN. I read the New York Times even, well, reluctantly. But I did read the Kansas City Star every day. You know, I live in Kansas City. Now, the Kansas City Star is ridiculous. And I think what happened is when they lost, and I would trace it back, oddly. I think the technology that doesn't get the credit it deserves for breaking the kind of gently liberal stranglehold on the media that prevailed from, say, the advent of the TV in about 1950 to about 1980 was the VCR. Because the VCR, for the first time, allowed individuals to see material, video material, that wasn't processed through, you know, three or four big entities. And then with the emergence of talk radio, the major media began to see themselves as adversaries in a media war. And the irony is, and the real misfortune of it, in one some ways, is that on the right, I mean, no one dismisses or denies that Rush Limbaugh is a partisan. He is. But the New York Times still works under the illusion that they're objective and they're putting out the truth, and they're not.
We're talking with our author of the week, Jack Cashill. The book is Unmasking Obama, The Fight to Tell the True Story of a Failed Presidency. I mean, you clearly have recognized, have insight as to the situation as it is with this bias, if you want to call it the stranglehold. Has there been any instance or any moment in which even you were surprised by how overt or how how bad?
Well, yesterday surprised me. I mean, for instance, the Twitter and Facebook suppression of the New York Post story was, I thought, unprecedented. I mean, I could see them shadow banning or, you know, denying or doing some little things, but just a collusion, outright ban. I don't know what their stocks are doing today, but I wouldn't want to be a stockholder, either one of them. There are, and there's others. When you look at the Obama presidency, for instance, and what I do in the book, Nick, is I like positive stories. So I tell the stories of the people who broke the truth. And many of them are citizen journalists or, you know, people who are working for small, outlying blogs. But their ability to deny, I talked about Stephen Colbert once, talking about Fast and Furious. And he jokes. He said, he's allegedly a comedian, for those who don't know. He says, Fast and Furious, he's laughing, is the biggest scandal I ever forgot to talk about. Well, how do you think the parents of Brian Terry felt about that? Or the hundreds of Mexicans who were killed as a result of Fast and Furious, you know? Or the story that I've covered in the book, I cover in the book and I've talked about a lot, is the story of the murder of Seth Rich in Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah.
You're not allowed to talk about it. Fox News, Sean Hannity has to testify this month. He's being sued for daring to talk about it on air. And here's what we know. Seth Rich was murdered. He was a DNC staffer. He was shot twice in the back. They didn't take anything, the thieves, and the case is unsolved. But we're not allowed to talk about it after Julian Assange goes public and says that very strongly implies that Seth Rich was his source for the DNC emails. That's the level of suppression we deal with. It's less that they lie to us, although they do that. But their real talent of the major media is to suppress stories unflattering to their worldview.
I worry, and I wonder your thoughts on, you know, where we go from here. Once upon a time, theoretically, one side wins an election, and so the other side just sort of waited. Hope for the best during that period of time, and then thought, okay, now here's our turn in order to try and win back control. But it's clear, particularly since Trump got elected, that that's no longer acceptable for the left. It is just about power grabbing, denying every election. I mean, you know, of course, they began that with 2000. Bush didn't really win. And even in 2004, a little bit with Ohio, they tried to claim that he didn't win that race either. And now Trump, of course, he didn't legitimately win. And they're already setting the stage for that now. But I think to myself, you know, these situations in which the New York Post being an example with the censorship of that as it backfiring on them, but they don't get burned. They don't see it as, oh, we'd better not do that again. they seem to figure out either a workaround or, well, we're just going to do it anyway. Maybe we apologize this time, but next time we won't, because they get more angry and angry and angry at every turn. And so where do you see them going from here?
Yeah, Nick, that's an excellent question. And you're right about with the 2016 outcome. And of course, the greatest political scandal of our time is the whole Russia collusion hoax. And its little sister, the Ukrainian collusion hoax, mm-hmm. which is now being played out. After 3 years of battering us with a false narrative, no one in the major media has apologized. And what's appalling is that in 2018, when every member of your audience knew that the whole Russia collusion thing was a joke, the New York Times and Washington Post shared a national reporting Pulitzer for their coverage of Russia collusion. I don't know. We need an explosive event, that leaves so much egg on so many faces that they finally, someone, somewhere in that, it just can take one entity, just one major entity, a CNN or a Washington Post or someone, to fess up and say, we've got to change our model.
Yeah.
And, you know, where it shows up most, economically problematically, is at the local level in a city like Kansas City, for instance, where, you know, you at the center of two totally red states, both Kansas and Missouri went for Trump by 19 or 20 points. And yet you become this little outpost of progressive indoctrination, and your readership shrinks from 90%, literally 30, 40 years ago, they had 90% audience share. And now they're down to what, 5 or 10%? Their parent company has gone bust. At some point, it becomes so economically dysfunctional that they'll have to say, let's rethink this. We haven't reached that point, though, yet.
We're talking with our author of the week, Jack Cashel, the book Unmasking Obama, The Fight to Tell the True Story of a Failed Presidency. I was reading through some of the different descriptions of the book, and I was so glad to see something I have referenced so often, and that is Ray Bradbury and the firemen and the digital book burning. I've been talking about digital book burning for a couple of years now, and it's just so amazing to me. I grew up in a period of time where the cliche was that conservatives wanted to ban books and they were tantamount to book burners, and the left were all about freedom of speech and how, you know, they may not like what you say, but they will die for your right to say it. And now they are the firemen. They are the digital book burners of our area that Ray Bradbury wrote of in Fahrenheit 451.
Right. In fact, the book is Fahrenheit 451 is a classic 1953, dystopian novel. And you're right, in that book, the firemen, and it was a good observation on your part, Nick, are the ones who come in and they destroy information that the state does not want you to have. Yesterday was a fireman festival, with Twitter and Facebook, but they do another thing that's really even more devious. So, for instance, this poor blind guy, legally blind guy, who runs the computer shop, they Joe the plumbered him yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
If you remember Joe the plumber was the guy, and all he does is ask Obama an innocent question. Obama mistakenly tells him the truth. You know, we just want to spread the wealth around. He's on a rope line in some small town in Ohio. Next thing you know, the New York Times is sending the reporters in. They're talking. There's a big article 2 days later on his tax liens, on his lack of actually having an active plumber's license in Ohio. And then yesterday they sent their people in to discredit the shop owner in Delaware. That's the way they work. That's the way the firemen work now. They go in to destroy not just the message, but the messenger.
Yeah.
And in the course of this book, I've gotten in even before this. I know a lot of these people personally that I talk about. A classic case is David Delighted, the young guy who broke the undercover story that Planned Parenthood was selling, was actually trafficking in the parts of aborted babies. And in 2015, his videos, he spent 2.5 years on his project going undercover. It exploded. Even Hillary Clinton said they were disturbed by what they saw. and then the book burners come in immediately, the media book burners come in immediately and try to discredit him and his story. But then at another level, there are political allies, in this case, Kamala Harris, then the Attorney General of the United States, sends a half a dozen heavily armed agents of the State Attorney General's office with dogs and AR-15s into his apartment with the express purpose of taking his computer, his hard drives, and all his videos. And 2 weeks earlier, she had met with Planned Parenthood and gone over their needs to have this information suppressed. That's when book burning reaches truly dystopian levels right in front of us, and no one wants to talk about it.
Well, I tell you, Dan Rather must think I was so ahead of my time.
I mean, yeah, and in fact, that comes up in the book, because that was really one of the classic examples of how the Samizdat, the underground media, surfaced, and they used the internet to do it. And for younger viewers, don't remember Rathergate 2004. But what happened, because I was involved in the front end of that. That was the whole notion of Swift Boat with John Kerry, where he fabricated his own biography and made himself a war hero. Then, as revenge, Dan Rather and CBS launched this thing called Operation Favorite Son with the Democratic Party to target George Bush, saying that he ducked out of his National Guard service early. And to do that, they produced these documents. They're sharing them on TV. And then the guys are, just got regular people out in the hinterland, just ordinary Joes, start saying, whoa, those documents from 1968 are on Palatine, typewriters didn't have that typeface back then, They were clearly forged. They were transparently forged. And that's when the CBS executive said, how can they, like the biggest network in the world, be undone by people sitting in their pajamas in their basement,
right?
The PJ Media came out of that experience. So.
Well, and unfortunately, what seems to have happened, instead of saying, well, maybe we ought to get our act together, if that were to happen today with Dan Rather, I mean, maybe a quick correction and then say, well, which I think Rather did, we don't know that it wasn't true, or we can't prove that it was fake.
They would
just write it off and it would just be another day.
And what was the New York Times headline, fake but true? Or fake but accurate. Fake but accurate.
Oh boy, I tell you what. Well, listen, I really appreciate you being with us this morning. It's Jack Cashill, the author of the week, the book Unmasking Obama, The Fight to Tell the True Story of a Failed Presidency. Thank you so much for being with us, giving us your time this morning.
Hey, Nick, anytime, sir. Happy to come back. Right. Talk to you soon, and good job.
All right, thank you very much. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed.